Well, greetings once again to all of Turdville. It is Thursday, and instead of our regular access-to-access presentation, I wanted to do something a little different today. With the markets, the global gold markets getting increasingly opaque, especially the stuff that's centered out of London, it's just getting harder and harder for me, and I know for everybody here in Turdville, to keep track and try to measure the fundamentals and the things that drive price on a daily basis. And so I thought, what better time than right now to sit down and visit with my friend Andrew McGuire. Most of you know who Andy is. He is based in London. He's got his own trading company now called AndrewMcGuireGoldTrading.com. You can go there and check it out and find his expertise at that site. But it's been a pleasure for me to get to know Andy over the last couple of years. And even though he's in London and I'm in Kansas and we've never actually shared a pint of beer, I consider him a friend. And so I wanted to bring him in and pick his brain a little bit. Andy, thank you for spending a few minutes here in Turdville.
Turd, it's always a pleasure to speak to you. And you know, we just don't do this enough, do we?
Well, we don't. And I forgot to tell you, even though I love hearing Turd in the English-British accent, you can call me Craig. It's okay. But you can call me anything you want at this point.
No, Craig it is. Craig it is.
All right, fair enough. You can do it. But anyway, like I said, late last fall, as price really got smashed and was driven way down, well below 1150, and everybody thought once it went through 1180 that it was going to be all she wrote and we were going straight into the triple digits. And instead, price reversed. And though it was bouncing along and actually putting in some interesting chart bottoms in November and December, it really seemed that we found a physical floor to price somewhere around 1150. GOFO rates went historically negative, as you know. But now the problem is we've recovered and then come back down, and the LBMA has made it even more difficult for guys like me to get a handle on what's going on over in London. I mean, the GOFO is no longer published. So we really don't know just how tight the physical markets are and even how the LBMA works. And so I just thought, like I said, it'd be fun to visit with you, Andy, just so you can kind of tell us a little bit about how things work over there and how you're able to measure physical demand and where you think that market is headed from here.
Yeah, that'd be great. And I think really it's such a big subject. I think it really pays to get right to the bottom line of, you know, how does the LBMA gold book get created? And how really by this gold book that's been created has actually now brought us to an unprecedented and growing mismatch between, you know, what you're referring to, the physical and the paper markets, which have diverged. And, you know, you and I and many of your subscribers have all expressed concerns about, you know, a forced cash settlement, which is the bottom line of this. One day, mm-hmm. we're going to mm-hmm. see a forced cash settlement, both on the COMEX and the LBMA, primarily because these positions are unallocated, and COMEX positions are cash positions primarily. It's only, what, 3% of COMEX ever gets delivered. And, you know, and you saw recently the CME coming in with new rules to stops, like market stops, 5-minute market stops.
Yep.
And I'm sure you've covered this subject with other people, but, you know, what I find interesting about that is that these same bullion banks are, and I digress a little bit here, but these same bullion banks, when you think that the amount of people that are forbidden from trading over-the-counter spot, other than in the U.S., that is, and virtually no U.S. citizen is allowed to trade spot on the markets unless they're an institution or they have permission to do so, and obviously the bullion banks in the that trade on the COMEX also have primary positions in the over-the-counter markets, and of course mm-hmm. that's how they get the CFTC they say to the CFTC, yeah, well, we're hedged, you know, we've got positions, you can't see them, I mean they're opaque, but you just accept our word that we've got all these positions hedged off. Okay, so now we're talking about a possible cash settlement, we talked about this before, I'm sure. It could either happen on a Friday night, and by Monday you've got a reset, or it could happen on some event, some black swan event during the day on the COMEX, and now suddenly we've got never these positions, these new rules, this new stop rule wasn't in place when we were looking like we were heading down. Mm-hmm. Ironically, it's suddenly come in when everything looks very, very close to a bottom. And so, but the thing about this, which I haven't seen written anywhere else or talked about, is that these same banks actually can live trade without any pause or any stop on the over-the-counter markets. So whereas all the US traders are forbidden from trading for the first 5 minutes, although they can start trading options 3 minutes later, for two solid minutes, and I'd say five solid minutes, these bullion banks can immediately go over and hedge all their positions and take counter positions on the over-the-counter markets in London. So that's an interesting point in itself. So this is no rig game, is it?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, exactly. And you know, we talk about this, the physical stress. And I know in London where, you know, you talk about the LBMA Gold Book and they're trying to match up all these old leases with new supply and try to keep the game going and all these unallocated accounts. I mean, is it really a situation where just one day the music just stops, where there suddenly people show up and there's 50 different owners trying to lay claim to the same 1 ounce of gold? I mean, is that, will that ultimately how it unwinds?
Yeah, this is exactly it. And I think, you know, perhaps when we've gone through this sort of example, which I'm going to give some provenance to, and I'm going to give an example of how this gold book is created. And then we can see what this position has created and how the LBMA is really in a position where there's almost nothing they can do about to resolve this situation other than being bailed out with a keystroke entry for a cash settlement. But, you know, I'm close to the physical market here in London. So, you know, all I can do is report what I am seeing based upon, you know, 35 years trading gold and silver. And I've never seen such a dangerous situation developing and reaching a point very soon where I can only see this possible backdoor solution. Now, I thought the disconnect in the year 2000 was bad enough, which caused the central banks to step in, if you remember, and bail out the one naked short bullion banks. And I'll give provenance to that 100-to-1 in a minute. But this is a current situation. This is a current situation, and it's wholly different and far more dangerous for the bullion banks this time. And so my concern is primarily related to the rapid increase in the physical drawdowns that we're witnessing now, weighing upon an already fully anticipated migration of the physical gold that's underpinning these derivative positions, these billions of dollars worth of derivative positions. So by stepping back just for a second and look what is actually verifiable, so, you know, trolls stand aside for a second before you make any comments. This has got full provenance. And let's see how this brings us to today and the actual demise of the bullion LBMA bullion banking system as we know it as it stands today. So, you know, just as a bit of hint, we all know this was the point where we can actually draw provenance from. When the long-term capital management blew up, it left Goldman Sachs holding the bag. And we know this. There was a 400-ton naked short gold book, and that was leveraged at 100-to-1. And that leverage was independently validated by our dear friend Jeffrey Christian of CPM Group.
Yep.
Because that name is familiar, I'm sure, to a lot of people. And CPM Group in the year 2000 verified this in a letter titled Bullion Banking Explained. Now, that's a letter that was at one stage mysteriously removed from CPM's website, but it was actually given to me in 2009 by a producer friend, and then I widely distributed it, and Gatta and Adrian Douglas from Gatta also distributed it in 2000 and 2010, but it's really a good document. Reference the very architect of the bullion banking, the LBMA bullion banking system. One of the architects is the CPM Group, and so this letter really, in all innocence, tried to describe how this system actually works and how the gold book is actually built. So let's go directly to the work of this architect.
Okay.
And so I really invite your listeners to download this Jeffrey Christian outline of Bullion Banking Explained, and it is available on the internet if you Google it. I'm going to summarize it really quickly and then walk through the first paragraph of the last page of this CPM explanation. And I actually do this in order to illustrate where things went wrong for the bullion banks and the central banks as well. And let me just start by acknowledging that, of course, it is totally acceptable to collateralize gold and silver, perhaps 3 to 5 times. And, you know, on a short term basis, maybe up to 10 times. But that would be purely for to facilitate probably transactions between a producer, a refiner, one thing and another. But these should be short term positions,
right?
In order for the bullion banks to, you know, for their financing facilities to function. But what I'm going to illustrate is how this opaque market functions, and the absolute clear temptation for the LBMA bullion banks to speculatively ramp up this leverage to 100-to-1 in the fractional reserve closed loop LBMA system. Now, Christian shoots himself in the foot when he seeks to explain the way in which these banks monetize their gold and silver positions, you know, using these positions as collateral for subsequent trades, and how that process is integral to understanding what's been driving gold and silver prices over the last few years. Now, these are his words, not mine. Now, here's where the explanation starts to go wrong. Whole bullion bank premise is based upon the fact that bullion banks treat their metal deposits in much the same way as they do deposits denominated in money. And so this becomes a reserve asset, which they lend additional money to borrowers, money to borrowers. So in other words, a fractional reserve, this is not new information. In other words, a fractional reserve gold book, which is anchored in fully unallocated metals promises that have an unknown counterparty risk. Now, the bullion banks openly use these gold assets as collateral for additional gold trades.
Mm-hmm.
So to illustrate, here's an actual example of how CPM Group enabled a deal between a producer and the LBMA bullion bank it was advising to further leverage up what should have been a straightforward, plain vanilla transaction, where the bullion bank was going to receive bullion coming due on rail. Now, this particular deal was in 1998, but it was also illustrated in this. It was used as an example in this Bullion Banking Explained, and it explains, you know, the way the bullion banks view their gold book. And this is word for word. I mean, it's only a short paragraph, but I really pay attention to exactly what this is. This is where the crux of the problem lays.
Go ahead.
So it says, these are his words. In the second quarter of 1998, one of our mining clients had a forward sale on its books, which was coming due at an unattractive price. This was a silver trade with a forward sale locked in at $5, coming due when silver was trading at $6 an ounce. Now, in fairness to the producer, its bank had forced it to sell forward, forcing it to use forwards instead of a more efficient options position as part of the terms of a revolving credit facility the bank had extended to this producer. Now, on our advice, the producer rushed forward and sold that month's silver output at the higher $6 spot price. Now, the chief financial officer of the mining company asked us, well, why the bank, which had a $1 price profit per ounce in the position, would even allow them to roll this position forward? Now, the explanation that having, this is his words, the explanation is that having silver position on its books at $6 per ounce provided the bank assets it can collateralize many times over, which is worth a lot more to a bank than $1 per ounce trade in one-time profits.
Yep.
Now, let's think about this. This is clearly not a plain vanilla transaction. So why did the bullion bank not take the commission themselves? You know, take the profit and commission themselves on this $1 profit, on this, you know, talking about if it was a COMEX contract, $5,000 a contract.
Mm-hmm.
So why would they not do this on this forward and start a fresh transaction? It's because they'd already speculatively sold short against this prior $5 forward purchase from this producer many times over. And by Christian's own words, in the March 2010 CFTC Metals meeting, to the tune of 100 to 1. Now, bottom line, no matter which way you cook it, by the time you expand the leverage, this was a highly speculative bullion bank trade and was reliant on the price of silver not rising above the aggregated $5.50 price they just accumulated. So this is not even accounting for the counterparty risk where a producer may fail to deliver on right. their forward sale. When, by its nature, the LBM bullion bank's incentive to cap prices starts feeding on itself to a point where the prices are driven so far below the producer's break-even that they choose to shutter their mine or force to close down. So, you know, it doesn't even account for the risks. So,
wait, that sounds exactly like almost where we are today, Andy.
It is, and fast forward to now. Yeah. So it's exactly where we are. So, you know, why is it that we're seeing 600 tons plus of gold and plus 5,000 tons of silver cleared by the LPMCL banks every single trading day? I mean, that doesn't even account for the synthetic volume traded on the COMEX. So there is no need, in my opinion, to get into the small print or the granular details. This is a heavy leverage, aggregated, accrued short bullion bank position anchored on a tiny fraction of the physical it is underpinned to. And is any wonder that when this physical becomes tight, how the leverage works in reverse against a cartel of banks that have a vested interest in capping the price of gold and silver. And this is exactly where we are now. And it's why the physical market is no longer centered in London and why the LBMA banks are now being threatened with competition. They've never envisaged this.
Well, and even the CME started trading, or the COMEX, whatever you want to, however you want to look at it, started trading that Hong Kong-based physical contract at the end of last month. I mean, they see where this is headed. And it seems to me, as you've described it, there's now this just accumulation. That's how these positions have gotten so large. This accumulation of all these, I don't know, I guess we'll call them hedges, but derivative obligations that have now reached this kind of a tipping point. I mean, Andy, you see it. You see the metal that is flowing out of London. You know, we get the reports of the net exports coming out of the U.S. We know what's going through Switzerland, and we know what the work that Koos Jansen does with the amount of metal that is flowing through Shanghai. This is kind of an aside, but I mean, it would seem like we are getting close to the end, because I mean, it's hard to fathom where that metal is being sourced in the first place. I mean, if London is nearly out of metal to some extent, and they're kind of living off of flow, I mean, doesn't that all kind of come together as to why we're so close to, or at least potentially so close to the end of this current system?
Yeah, absolutely. And as we say, it's the amount of physical flowing out. It's exactly what you're saying. And really, it's leverage working in reverse here. I didn't think any of this was ever anticipated. Right. And after the 2013 April smash, which coincided with Germany asking for their for their gold back, and ABM AMRO telling their clients they must settle for cash, and one thing and another. What happened was, you know what happened there. The only available above ground available source of physical gold, GLD, was raided.
Right.
Where to the point where. Who wants to sell it anymore? There isn't any sellers in there anymore of any size. So it's in the strong hands. So once you've tapped out of that, what's your next fix? So I think that's why I think I've been talking to you about a bit of a something that we've been keeping a bit under the covers lately. There's been a PR. We're starting the PR moves on it today, and it's an exciting development about an alternative, a completely alternative trading platform to the LBMA system, which I think is going to make a huge difference.
Well, you're talking about Bullion Capital, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And that's what as we kind of break. I don't want to call it death by a thousand cuts, but in a sense, that's what's happening. I mean, there are just all these different ways that London is I guess, falling apart, breaking. And as you said, the physical trade is beginning to shift, and the center, the new centers of the physical trade, the 21st century centers, are going to be in the East. And this leverage game, this paper leverage game, is blowing up just as the physical London gold pool finally blew up in 1968. And I know you're excited about bullion capital and what they're doing, and I think it's an important part of this this changing game. So what can you tell us about it?
Yeah, right, exactly. And this is all about, I think this is all about the LBMA waking up to the fact that that Asia, Shanghai, is already the global hub for physical gold, and you know, revealing a massive crack in the LBMA armor. And obviously, they've even invited China, just very briefly, looking at a bit about, even invited China in on the fixing process, and China's going to capitalize on this. I mean, as soon as this, I mean, this pathetic fixing process, there's no difference or very little difference to what we've always seen, because the LBMA, bottom line, the LBMA has still got their fingers in the pie.
Right.
So, but the next thing is a couple of really exciting developments, as you say, bullion capital, and I'll talk about that in a second. But next thing is you're going to see China, you know, which is already in a race with Singapore, going to be starting to publish an Asian gold fix in the kilo bar market. And that's going to bring transparency into the kilo bar market. So, you know, no matter what deals they've been done with the LBMA on the short term, very soon we're going to see China, the China fix, front running probably Singapore and London. Now, I was expecting this is at the end of January, but obviously I think we could expect to see them, this announced at any time now that the LBMA deal's done. But I, as you say, I shared with you some information a few weeks back on the development of a wholesale trading platform that completely sidesteps the LBMA closed loop system. Now, liquidity is rapidly flowing into this once opaque kilo bar market, which was really controlled by the bullion banks. And you know, the background to this is that through the bullion capital system, is that banks like the Bank of China would come to market to buy kilo bars. And, of course, being a closed-loop system, J.P. Morgan would spot that they were in the buying system. Again, you've got complete visibility. You know who the big buyers are. You know where the footprints are, and would front-run them. They got fed up. So over the last 2 or 3 years, this system was kind of geared up to, first of all, to counter this, to bring some anonymity to some of the big buyers, and then kind of opened it up to about 50 brokers, including myself, who are now part of a membership-based physical gold exchange under the Bullion Capital banner. Now, you know, the next, and this is a fully international facing, it's going to plug into a fully international facing bullion exchange, which is about to be fully publicized in the mainstream in the next 2 weeks. And for now, we're keeping the name of the exchange private, but in the next 2 weeks, you're going to see this this very, very large exchange with already plus 50 brokers plugging into it, large institutions plugging into it, and you're going to see this publicized in the next week or two. So this has got to be striking fear into the LBMA closed loop system.
Great.
So obviously, we're already offering clients direct access to, and there's been mostly institutional clients up until this point here, but we've been offering clients direct access to wholesale prices through a very liquid 23-hour-a-day platform that's ultimately going to be so liquid that it will totally negate the need for a London fix altogether. So London, you know, obviously, why should you have just a price twice a day when you have a 23-hour market with supply and demand? So, you know, London's either going to have to reflect real global supply-demand price discovery mechanisms, or they're going to be arbitraged in this increasingly liquid kilo bar market.
Yep.
Now, this is a huge deal, and it's been kept under the covers until it was absolutely bulletproof from interference. And, you know, Craig, you remember Ned and I were involved in the Pan Asia Gold Exchange launch, which it was launched in, I think, 2011.
Yeah.
yeah, I think it was July 2011. And what happened? It was killed. And so, you know, we wanted to make sure that this, or rather Bullion Capital wanted to be absolutely sure that this process was going to be bulletproof before going public. And so we can now go public because this non-LBMA direct access to the bullion markets is fully up and running. And the exchange is next, and it will add the necessary liquidity to completely circumvent London altogether. And, you know, even our current vault platform already provides direct access to the tightest buy sell spreads in the physical market. Now, comparing the over the counter spot market to the physical delivery market is like comparing an apple to an orange. Mm-hmm. But as liquidity migrates into the physical markets, even the spread between the cash unallocated gold market and the real physical delivery narrows because arbitragers and liquidity providers will capitalize on the difference. And there's no back door for the bullion banks here. And as yet, no one has realized what large changes are coming and how real bullion is going to be traded. And so it all boils down to the fact that by providing direct access to the wholesale market without going through a bullion bank, it empowers the end user. And up until now, the end user hasn't been able to directly access the wholesale market at all.
Right.
And as, you know, institutions, producers, refiners, and millions of end users are all going to share exactly the same platform and enjoy complete anonymity from the bullion banks and the same pricing too. It's all one platform. If you want to buy, you buy. If you want to sell, you sell. It removes the power away from the bullion banks' concentrated hands. They will no longer know if it's the Bank of China or Craig on the other side of that transaction.
I like the sound of that. Yes, both the Bank of China on one end and me on the other.
And it's why it's a game changer. And you know, these disruptive LBMA closed system, it's breached. So even though the regulators have dragged their feet, not acted on direct evidence, you know, provided to them, and I can personally attest to that.
Right.
In the end, it's the physical market that's going to break these banks and force them to cash settle these unallocated account holders in size. And as a result, I mean, we're going to see true price discovery reset. And the thing is, the amazing thing is, it's occurred by stealth.
Right, exactly, and kind of under the radar, you're able to pull this off. I'm going to kind of double back for a second, though, Andy, because there's a lot of people listening to us, though, because you're an expert in this field. Sometimes some of this gets lost in the translation a little bit, and it's not the English American, you know, two people separated by a common language type thing, you know? I just want to go back and kind of put this, let me kind of sum this back up into English for everybody, okay? Because you've got this will be a new platform, fully allocated, 100% physical, vaulted in, 11 different places around the world or whatever, right?
Absolutely.
So it's a fully allocated, not this unallocated 100-to-1 leverage stuff that happens in the LBMA, fully allocated. I would say between this and then some of these other exchanges, it's all part of the ultimately drawing liquidity away from not only trading liquidity and clients' liquidity, but also metal away from the LBMA. And this cumulative effect really puts the squeeze on these bullion banks that their books are maybe larger than they've ever been. Did I sum that up? I mean, did I put that?
Totally.
Okay.
In a nutshell. So in a nutshell, and that's exactly right. So, you know, we've even now got private producers that have approached us over the last 3 to 4 weeks. And when they, you know, we've been talking obviously to the institutions for a little while, but these private producers are now coming to us and saying, look, you know, we're now ready to ship our refined products directly from the refiners into the various global hub vaults. Wow. In this network. So whether it be the Shanghai Free Gold Free Zone, or whether it be, you know, Singapore, or wherever that mm-hmm. might be, New York for that matter. But, you know, once it's vaulted, they can execute sales or location swaps to and from any connected independent insured hub, because they're all independently insured. They're all outside the LBMA system. Malka Amit, you know, obviously the attestations are all there. But all of this bypasses the bullion banks. Mm-hmm. And they don't want to empower. When I've spoken to these producers, they're mad as hell at the they don't want to empower them,
right.
and they'd rather just find any route to sell their product than through the bullion banks. And you know, at no time has the end user ever been able to access the wholesale markets directly. So you're accessing a producer who's vended something into a vault location, and you can parachute in and buy that directly. So it's a tectonic shift in the way bullion's being traded.
Yes, and you're being very generous with your time, and I want to be respectful of that. But I have two other questions for you. One, if I could get you to speculate for a moment, how do you think this plays out in London? I mean, how would you expect the banks to act? I mean, look, I've been following, and readers of the site know that we've been following a trend line in gold that goes back to May of 2013 that has been almost, I don't want to say violently enforced, but it's been strictly enforced by the banks to maintain a downtrend, to suppress Western sentiment and therefore Western investment demand and kind of help them out, you know, because the last thing they need is now is Western investment demand returning. And they have been really compounding their position. I mean, if we look at just how many shorts were added on the COMEX in January to try to keep price from getting away, you know, and generating some upward momentum, I mean, they're not going silently into the night, Andy. It seems as if they just keep doubling down, desperately trying to maintain the status quo. So anyway, ultimately, I guess that's the first question. Would you expect them to do that? I mean, do they have the wisdom and the wherewithal to think, well, we better just kind of make an orderly transition here that we can see where this is going? Or will they just plant their flag in the ground and defend it until the system just breaks?
Well, I think the system has broken. And I think that there has been a change. Under the covers has been a change. What you're talking about is, you know, this massive downtrend that's anchored in distant history. I mean, you're talking about trend lines that are anchored in 10 years ago, 15 years ago in some instances, and some of them more recently. But what we're talking about is the wash and rinse cycle. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that wash and rinse cycle, which has been COMEX-centric. I mean, there was a time when in 2010, I believe it was, that where open interest. I know you're very, very good at tracking this, probably better than me, Craig, but 600. I think we used to have 650,000 contracts of open interest open on the GC contracts,
right?
Back in 2010. Well, what now? We're in the 300 range.
Mm-hmm.
And why is that? I mean, it's after the MFG, PFG collapses. What happened is suddenly people woke up to the fact, hang on, this is a Ponzi scheme.
Right.
And people who had their physical drawn back in to the settlement process, even though you had allocated physical in the COMEX, you weren't necessarily being able to pull it out when those broker collapses happened. So, you know, so really what's happened here is that a lot of open interest has vanished. Now, what's left is just these, it's purely synthetic. There's very few real traders in the COMEX anymore.
Right.
And I think, under the covers, the primary two culprits that we know have been involved in all of these lawsuits, mm-hmm. and who are currently being reinvestigated, the two primary suspects have actually reduced their proprietary trading positions immensely. And I think the real problem, or the real culprits now, are the likes of the Goldman Sachs, the Citibanks, the UBSs, who in the swap dealer category of the commitment traders report. And you can see these guys constantly taking one-to-one, taking the short side of, and it really annoys me to see this managed money come in, this hot money chasing price above physical levels to the point where they just become easy meat, and then bang, down it goes again, and we reach the same point and the inverse point now where you watch it in the commitment of traders report, you see it in the open interest moves. And so where are we now? We're at the inverse.
Right.
If you notice, these patterns are getting smaller. You know, there comes a point where if you've got the physical market starting to draw down and saying thank you very much, so how much lower than 1,200 can you go? You know, you've got sovereign buyers, you've got central banks in there buying. So there comes a point where your synthetic names have a limit.
Right.
And that's it. And I think it's as simple as that. There's a limit to what you can do. So if that's the case, and I believe it, sincerely it is the place, I believe the bottom is in, but the point is it's physically driven. The market's being physically driven, and it's being physically driven outside of London.
Right.
And these guys, that's what we're talking about. They've lost control. Their gold book is backed, is underwater. Where is the settlement? Well, it can only be a cash settlement on this. And they don't pretend it's physical anyway.
Well, let me go from there then to then my second question, because this is kind of where I started when we started talking. How do we measure this, Andy? I mean, it used to, you know, I got to where I was tracking GOFO, and you could almost track it with price, and you could see every time it went negative that we were about ready to turn because there was a shortage of metal in London, and they had to let price rise and all that kind of stuff. But now GOFO, the at least as it's published every day, is no longer available. The market's opaque. You've got your contacts there that give you some idea of, you know, where the sovereign bids are and what the size of the physical offtake is every day. But how are we going to know? I mean, I guess ultimately is my question. I mean, can you give any advice to everybody out in the world that recognizes as true everything that you and I have talked about? And you can see now with this new platform coming on as being just another big weight of trading that's moving out of London. How can we measure the stress at this point? How can we tell how close it is, or how close this game is to ending the current system, the current LBMA fractional system? How can we tell how on a daily or weekly basis how close this is getting? Or do you just say, you know what, just know it's going to happen, and so therefore just keep stacking metal? I mean, is there a way that we can monitor this independently?
Well, I think, I mean, obviously your last comment is the most prudent to just obviously at these kind of levels, absolute sense to be buying physical. You know, obviously there are people that say, well, why the hell do you trade this market? You know, it's, well, obviously, you know, we have to make a living. So we do. There's only one real, I mean, GOFO to me, yeah, it was an indication of footprints, but it was highly dilutive anyway, because again, it all relates to an unallocated market where you've got, you know, where again, if you got 600 tons of gold trading every day and 5,000 tons of silver being cleared every day, and obviously that affects, and that gives you a big flywheel to affect the numbers. And when you did see backwardations in GOFO, it was because of extreme stress.
Right.
And because you couldn't even hide it at that point. I think there's two things I'd look for. It's as simple as this. When we look at the price of gold, every morning I look at the price of spot gold. Okay, it's a market, it's unallocated, but I look at the price of spot and I look at the price of futures. And we are in a situation of backwardation constantly between spot gold at these levels, at spot gold and futures, the front month's futures contract, not even looking out further out. Some people say, you know, backwardation, you have to look at the further months out. No, you just look at what it is. What is the difference? Now, there are two ways we arrive at a condition of backwardation in gold and silver. One is a physical shortage, or two, the only other reason, the creation of excessive naked short futures positions.
Right.
That's it. That's all there is to it. I mean, that you can get into all the granular detail of it, and we are seeing a condition of backwardation constantly.
How about measuring backwardation versus the London spot or the fix versus and what's going on, the price that comes out of Shanghai or Hong Kong? I mean, what's the proper way to measure which futures or derivative contract you measure that against the spot?
Oh, I would just use, in other words, I'd look at right now, you know, the front month COMEX futures position, which is GCJ5, and
right.
then the front month silver contract, which is just expiring, obviously, it's SIH5. But that's what I would do. And because really, I mean, you know, you're looking at, why is somebody not arbitraging this? You know, why is that? You know, why is spot trading at a premium, are constantly trading at a premium to, and you're seeing, and yet it never really seems to back, it needs to go into contango.
Right.
And so, you know, to me, that's just an indication. And obviously there are many reasons why that might be, but there, it's an indication that the spot, at least the spot market in the UK, in the London, in the over-the-counter spot market, has a deliverable element to it,
right?
And therefore, obviously, there are people who will buy spot. For example, now for example, India is sitting back and waiting for a duty cut this weekend, and I'm sure you've been all over that. Mm-hmm. On Saturday. The budget comes in, and the likelihood there is a budget, a duty cut on gold. Now, that has meant that the Indian wholesalers have been sitting back quietly, just delivering just-in-time stuff, but not doing any stocking up. However, in the over-the-counter market, when we get discounts, there is what they're doing, and I know of one instance of this for sure, where a wholesaler has been buying spot, not taking delivery, but buying spot. In other words, what we call spot indexing.
Right.
And so, you know, you get a price of 1200 presented or sub 1200, they're going to come in, index. Now, by not taking delivery, they can choose to, if we get a duty cut or not for that matter, because we've built up pent up demand anyway, but get a duty cut and then they come to delivery for that spot contract, over the counter spot contract in London, will come to delivery and enjoy the duty cut as well. But they've also, in the meantime, recognizing they can read the charts as well as anyone else. They know they're much closer to the physical market than most traders are. And they know that we're at a point where there's so much sovereign interest, so much central bank interest in this area that is not going to go away. And the physical is flowing out. So that's what's going to happen. So essentially what I'm saying is the spot market is ultimately deliverable. The COMEX market is really just a pale reflection of what's going on.
Well, Andy, I have to go back and listen to this again myself, because you've given us so much information in the last 40 minutes. Hopefully we can sit down and visit some more. Maybe perhaps once the new exchange is up and running in a couple of weeks, you can come back and you can talk a little bit more once that thing is live about how it's affecting things.
I certainly will.
And there's so much more to talk about. We just kind of just started scratching the surface at the end, how some of this wholesale stuff works in London, you know, about how an Indian wholesaler can buy in spot, but then index it into his currency, right, for delivery at a future date whenever he thinks it's the best time to do it, right? That's kind of how those things work. And
absolutely.
And that's all part of the process that American-centric futures traders, people just don't have any idea how that stuff works and how it impacts the day-to-day price moves, you know, that then are flow back through into those bullion bank trading books. So anyway, there's a lot more to cover, but at the same time, we've been at this for a while, so we probably better shut it down for now. Tell everybody, yep, though, as we go, again, we're looking forward to getting that platform up and running in the next couple of weeks. I've got a link to a thing I found earlier today. It must have gone out with a press release. That it's on a site called Forex Magnates, Bullion Capital, on track to revamp the physical gold market. So I'll link that into this podcast so everybody can read it. I'll find a link, too, to Jeffrey Christian's old PDF on Bullion Banking Explained so everybody can read that, too. In our time remaining, though, tell everybody about your new service and what you do there and where they can find you on the internet.
Yep, well, I've consolidated everything under my own banner now. I think because I've moved so far into the wholesale markets now, I think it was time to just bring all my trading services under one banner. And so basically what I do is I provide a live commentary during the day. I let people exactly what I'm doing on a live basis, whether it be on a swing trade basis or a shorter term basis. I also provide a morning video called London Calling, where people can get before the London Open, have a look at all the charts ahead of the day, look at what might be of interest, look at the currency crosses and see what, you know, whether we're looking at a bullish or a bearish bias, and that kind of thing. And I just, you know, I find that people find it helpful. And also I've got the Vault service service, which is the way to plug in to the wholesale platform. As I say, I'm one of over 50 brokers plugging into the Bullion Capital system, and the new exchange for that will be up in March. Will be started in March, or will be launched in March. But we should have the announcement on that in the next couple of weeks. And definitely, Craig, I will come back and talk to you more about that. And if you have any questions from what we were talking about today, I'd be pleased to answer sort of on a more basis or more sure. pinpoint a basis.
And that's all at just all one word like they do on the internet. Andrew McGuire with an A. Andrew McGuire, goldtrading.com, correct?
That's it. Yeah.
All right. I encourage everybody to go there and check it out. Andy, thank you. I don't even know what to say. I can't thank you enough for how generous you've been with your time this morning. And I encourage everybody to go back and maybe re-listen to this, because there's just so much valuable information there. Thanks for all you do and continue to do in fighting this fight. I know eventually we're going to win, and it's so often three steps forward and then two steps back, but your services are invaluable toward ultimately winning the war here, and hopefully we'll visit again soon.
Oh, Craig, it's been a pleasure, and definitely we'll visit soon.
All right, my friend. Have a great rest of your day.
Thank you, Dan.